Our study tonight is in Philippians chapter 4, verses 1 through 5, God's call to a reasonably fitting behavior. As we've often noted in this lesson series, the Philippian believers lived in a culture that was marked by selfish ambition and strife, what tempted them to relate to one another in a sinfully selfish way. The Apostle Paul thus directed his readers toward a selfless manner of living, especially in Philippians chapter 2, verses 1 through 30. However, selflessness, does not mean yielding to error, for believers must earnestly contend for the faith, like Jude chapter, verse 3 says. So Paul directed his readers to function with a reasonably fitting behavior in all that they did in Philippians chapter 4, 1-5. I want to read those verses, and then we'll look at them. Philippians 4, verses 1 through 5. Therefore, my brethren, dearly beloved and longed for, my joy and crown, so stand fast in the Lord, my dearly beloved. I beseech Euodias, and I beseech Tyntyche, that they be of the same mind in the Lord. And I entreat you also, true yoke fellow, help these women, which labored with me in the gospel, along with Clement also, and with the other of my fellow laborers, whose names are in the book of life. Rejoice in the Lord always. Again I say, rejoice. Let your moderation be known unto all men. The Lord is at hand. Okay. Having spent much of the epistle of Philippians directing his readers toward a selfless life, Paul came to the point in his letter where he would address the significant disagreement the two ladies, Euodias and Syntyche, experienced that evidently had affected the entire body of believers at Philippi. Apparently, the disagreement between these two ladies had reached fever pitch. Paul had heard about it, and it was well known in the church. So Paul, in writing to the whole church, addresses these ladies specifically because it's affecting the relationship throughout the entire body. However, these two women, Euodias and Syntyche, had correctly labored with, and a better translation than the King James labored with is actually contended along with. Sunathleo means to get into a conflict with and conflict alongside Paul. And they had been in contending with Paul for the gospel. In other words, they had properly withstood attacks against the gospel that Paul had preached in an arena of spiritual conflict. Keep in mind, these are two ladies that have grown up in Philippi. Philippi culturally is very selfish, very self-centered because of the history of the area. And when you get people who by nature have come from a self-centered background and they have to contend along with Paul, the contending can get pretty sharp, pretty strong. And what happened is these ladies took this contention that they had with Paul, they were contending with him against the Judaizers, and on an issue between them, they got to contending with one another. They just carried it over into contending with one another. And so they were doing it, they were directing it in the wrong direction. Well, righteously having to contend for the faith, if mixed with a background of selfish ambition, can readily lead one to augment his native disposition to be self-centered. So Paul carefully balanced his directives with the believers at Philippi, directing them to practice a reasonably fitting behavior in all of their conduct. And that's where we're getting in verses 1 through 5. First of all, Paul affirmed his love for his readers as those whom he loved and longed for, his joy and crown of victory that he would win from the Lord for having discipled them. The Bible Knowledge Commentary points out that the word for crown here is Stephanos. Stephanos is not a crown that a king wears. It's a crown that an Olympic athlete wears when he's won the games. He's tried and he's put out the effort and he's become a victor. And this crown was a crown of a wreath of a little oak tree that went around the top of the head this way. And when it was handed out, it was very valuable because you and your wife and all of your children for the rest of their lives were taken care of by the state. Automatic, free. And you became a citizen, you were a citizen of the state and everything, and you were held in high honor. Essentially, when you won the Olympic Games, you got to retire. That was it. And you were on easy street. And that's what this was. This is a wreath of victory. So Paul says, in having led you to Christ, you've become my wreath of victory, my crown. And that's very interesting. Well, Paul affirmed his love for these people, telling them that he longed for them, they were his joy, his crown of victory, and he would win from the Lord for having discipled them. So he's very positive. And this is one way, a beautiful way, to address a problem that exists. Come out positive. A lot of times, the way we say something is as important as what we say. I've used this illustration once in the Sunday school class, I think, recently. There was a lady that went and talked with her boss, and she came out smiling, and someone else said, "What did he say to you?" She said, "Oh, he fired me." "Well, why are you smiling?" "Oh, you should have seen the way he did it. He made me feel so good." So, you know, even getting fired, if you do it the right way, can, you know, be a wonderful experience. He then urged them, as his beloved disciples, to stand firm in the Lord. However, Iodius and Syntyche were in such conflict with each other that it created a problem in the church. So Paul, in his epistle, asked both ladies to be of like mind. Autophronein. Auto means the same, and phronein is to think the same. Now, this doesn't mean that one has to compromise on principle. What he's asking for is that you keep the same goal. In other words, back off and give each other room and allow yourself. This is almost like our word agree to disagree. In other words, don't make it into a fighting issue. That's what Paul is saying. Keep the same goal in the Lord. This request would strain these ladies, for they had both labored with Paul to contend with him, synatheleo, against the foes of the gospel, so they were readily disposed with their self-centered natural heritage, as augmented by having contended with Paul for the gospel, to continue to contend quite heatedly for whatever difference they had between them. So Paul also entreated some unnamed yoke fellow. We don't know who this yoke fellow is, but it's a yoke fellow of some kind, to help these ladies heed his call to be like-minded and keep the same goal. Ladies who had contended with him, along with Clement and the rest of Paul's fellow workers, whose names were in the Book of Life. It's interesting, Paul refers to these people as having their names in the Book of Life. That's the Lamb's Book of Life. These are saved people. And he's emphasizing the positive, and as he's correcting them. Well, knowing that his entreaty would require difficult actions by everybody that's involved, efforts not viewed as easy or enjoyable, Paul twice urged all of his readers at Philippi to rejoice in the Lord. You see that pick up in verse 4, rejoice in the Lord always. And again I say, rejoice. We need to be happy people. That's what he's saying. Put a smile on. Stop fighting. Put a smile on. And so forth. Well, all of these widely varying directives of rightly contending for the faith, combating a heritage of selfish ambition to settle petty differences among themselves, and of constantly rejoicing the Lord needed a fitting summary directive. One Paul's readers could have as a main focus. So Paul gave it in Philippians 4:5. Now, we read the verses, let your moderation be known unto all men, the Lord is at hand. So I did a word study on moderation. I was kind of confused. What did he mean by moderation? Why is he saying that here? Well, it actually needs to be translated slightly differently. Paul directed that his readers let their moderation, that's what the King James Version says, a better translation is reasonably fitting behavior. It's an unusual word, epieikeia. Epieikeia. That means a behavior that is fitting the occasion. Solomon talks about a word fitly spoken is like pictures of apples and pictures of gold. I mean, gold apples and pictures of silver or something like that. Well, that's what he's talking about here. Reasonably fitting behavior. Be known unto all men, whether it was getting along with one another, as in the case of Iodius and Syntyche, whether it was helping other believers unite, as Paul was urging his yoke fellow of Philippi, or whether it involved contending for the gospel against unsaved apostates, the believer was to utilize reasonably fitting behavior for each situation involved. Now, the behavior would change. When you have to contend earnestly for the faith, obviously you have to be a little more forceful, but at the same time positive and not cruel. We have to be kind, even though we're contending firmly for the gospel. When it comes to settling differences where we're not supposed to be contentious with one another, our behavior pattern needs to modify from that big time. We need to soften the speech and back off and so forth. In In other words, there is a fitting behavior for every situation. We were reading, and my wife and I are going through the book of Proverbs in our Sunday, in our evening devotions. We've just come through the very familiar proverb that says, "A soft answer turneth away wrath." Boy, that's a great one. Sometimes if someone blows up at you, sometimes just coming back with a very gentle and soft answer will automatically modify their behavior, make them calm down, because they don't want to come back yelling at you if you're speaking to them kindly. So it's interesting. The fitting behavior, the behavior has to fit the situation, and it has to be that which is fitting and decent. So this summary behavior was to be used in view of the fact that the Lord was near. In other words, in view of the rapture of the church, when every believer would give an account of himself for behaving in every situation he had faced in a manner that God saw as fitting in the situation. Now, that's a great thing to keep in mind. You get into an incident, and someone speaks to you in a certain way, and it kind of gets your hackles up. A good way to think about responding is, how should I respond in view of the fact that Jesus is watching me right now, and someday I'm going to give an account to him at the judgment seat as to how I responded? You know, if you put it that way, all of a sudden it modifies your behavior big time, because you don't want to lose your cool and blow up, obviously, because that doesn't look good in front of the Lord. It doesn't, you know, you can't answer to the Lord that way. So that's what Paul is saying. The Lord's at hand. So make sure that your behavior is fitting. So Paul taught his Philippian readers to practice a variety of actions, be they contending for the faith, rejoicing in the Lord, getting along with each other, or helping other believers get along with each other, actions that strained against the sinful, selfish ambition of their natural heritage at Philippi. So in summary, he called them to a form of behavior that reasonably fit each situation they faced in view of their final accountability to the Lord. So, may we rely on the Holy Spirit for behavior control to do all that we're called to do, regardless how diverse the various circumstances involved, with that form of behavior that reasonably fits each situation. Had an incident that occurred today, very interesting. We had a visitor who was with us, an elderly gentleman. He was speaking with me, and he was giving his testimony, how he was saved and everything. And then right in the middle of this, he said, "By the way, you better preach from the King James Version, because if you ever preach from something like the New International Version, I'm out of here." Okay. Well, I could have told him, well, we our pew Bible is the NIV, but he would have been out of here. Okay. Or I could have said, well, if you know, I preach from the King James Version, but if that's your attitude, we do have two doors, and you can choose either one. You know. And that's what you're tempted to do. But then I remembered something that happened a number of years ago. We had a vacation Bible school, a daytime VBS, and one of the mothers who had her children here, she asked me, "Pastor, what Bible do you use in your pew?" And I thought, oh, here's a King James only here again. So I said, "Well, we happen to use the New International Version, and one of my profs, Kenneth Barker, is the general editor of the NIV, and It's a translation that is designed to be closer to the American English than in the Hebrew and the Greek. I preach from the King James Version. I actually recommend the English Standard Version." But the lady didn't know what to do with that. Well, eventually she started attending our church. And when she started attending our church and I was explaining from the Hebrew and the Greek what went on, She got a hold of me after. She said, "Where are you getting that information?" I said, "Well, it's in the Bible." "Well, it's not in my King James." No, it's in the Hebrew or the Greek or something, because that's what it's translated from." "Is that right?" Well, to make a very long story short, that lady is still attending our church. She was in our church today. Now, if I had told her, well, you have the New International Version, but if you have a problem with King James, you better get out of here, she would have been gone. And what good is that? You know, all it does is create a division. Now, I happen to have a King James, and I preach from the King James. In case a King James only person comes in here, I don't want him immediately to be turned away. I want him to listen to what I have to say. But I know that King James only people don't have the proper adequate scholarship. And if you really look at the scriptures, you have to be more eclectic and do your own study and research as to regards to what particular version or what particular version you'd use, because there are some really bad translations, even in the King James, and actually errant theology in Romans chapter 8, verse 1, that says you have to walk a good Christian walk, otherwise you're not saved, you're under condemnation. And, of course, that's not what really should be saying there. So a better manuscript reading there is the Alexandrian read and so forth. But I'm finding, as a pastor, the best thing to do is not to come back and combat a person who's got his hackles up in regards to King James only, but to seek to minister the word and be patient. So from the experience that I had with this other lady who is now in our church, I didn't answer the man. I just let him talk. My hope is that he'll come back. See? And then hopefully we can minister the word. But I'm finding that the fitting response in a situation like that is to be very gentle, be very patient, but just keep preaching the word. We're not compromising at all. But we need to give people an opportunity to understand what the truth is so that they can come to the Lord. So there is a fitting response, and that's what God's after. The fitting response, the decent response, the wise response, not compromise. But what is the fitting response so that it's a response that we don't mind answering to the Lord for when we go to see him.